Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. Back to The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, it's draft day. Seahawks fans, I got you covered. The sports director of Fox 13 in Seattle, KCPQ in Seattle, host of Seattle Sports Live, Seahawks game day, Seahawks Saturday night, talking Huskies, man of the world, good follow on Twitter. It's not Adam Levine of Maroon 5. It's Aaron Levine of Fox 13. How you doing?
You do not want to hear me sing, John. I'll tell you that much. So, yes, I'm not Adam, and I have been called that a number of times. And if you ever heard me in the shower, it's not a thing you want to ever hear.
We were talking about this before you came on, but, like, you know, we were in a restaurant one time, and somebody called in and said, hey, Bob Dylan's coming, and everybody got in a tizzy over it, and it turned out he was just a realtor from Canada. It wasn't the singer. You'd get a table in Seattle if you said, hey, this is Adam Levine.
That is true. And there's always a dilemma. If somebody from 20 feet away yells, hey, Adam, do I acknowledge it? Do I acknowledge the wrong name? Or
no.
Do I completely ignore it and the guy doesn't like me very much after that?
You ignore it. Hey, Stanford grad, you're a Pac-12 guy. Are you rooting for the Pac-12 in the draft today?
I'm definitely rooting for the Pac-12. And I'm not normally a Ducks fan, but if Kayvon Thibodeau falls to number 9, I'll be a huge Kayvon Thibodeau fan, especially if the Seahawks take him. I think they should.
Let's talk Seahawks. When you see their needs, what's at the top of the list in your mind?
I think it's edge rusher. I think it is also offensive lineman. And then I think it's cornerback. I think you go those three directions. It's one of the reasons why I don't think that you take Malik Willis if he's available at number 9. You have too many other needs. And if you go back to the very first draft that Pete Carroll and John Schneider had, in the first couple of drafts, they built this team around a dominating defense. They didn't pick up Russell Wilson until their third year in Seattle. What they want to do now is build up this defense because the quarterback situation is up in the air, and the way they won a championship here back in 2013 was with a dominant defense, and hopefully they can replicate that.
Is there, you know, there would be a temptation maybe to go quarterback at some point here, but is the window for this team, will it allow for a young QB? I guess what I'm saying is, are they better off finding something on their own roster or making a trade versus taking a young guy in the draft that may not be ready before Pete Carroll is ready to retire?
Yeah, I think the theme here is not to force anything. If a quarterback is not available that they have fallen in love with, remember, they've only taken two quarterbacks in the draft under Carroll and Schneider, and Alex Magoo really doesn't count because he's a seventh rounder, so it's just Russell Wilson. If they don't have that guy fall to them, then don't force the issue. Build your team around who you have right now, and because I believe the quarterback class is evaluated much higher next year, go and get the guy you really want next season. Now, does that mean that we're looking at a 2011 season with, say, a Charlie Whitehurst or Tavares Jackson, then you get the quarterback you really want next year? That's a possibility. I don't know if Drew Lock is the answer. I don't know if their quarterback of the future is in their locker room right now. I mean, listen, Drew Lock went, 4-1 as a starter as a rookie before they changed their offense in Denver under a new coordinator, and they had COVID. So he might have a little bit more potential than people are giving him credit for. I don't know if Geno Smith would be the answer either. I mean, they were in games last season against Pittsburgh on the road on Monday Night Football and against the New Orleans Saints. They beat Jacksonville, so they were somewhat competitive. Are they going to be all world with one of those two quarterbacks? Probably not, but it's just kind of a bridge to the future. And Pete Carroll says he's here at least for the next 5 years.
Historically, John Schneider, Pete Carroll, they have moved back and they have done well moving back, picking up extra assets. But will that please the fan base if they drop back a little bit or if they drop out of the first round altogether?
Absolutely not. You need – listen, this is also the first time since 2012 that they've had a top 15 pick. And in fact, they've only had three top 15 picks during their tenure here. They have succeeded with those picks, Russell Okung, Earl Thomas, Bruce Irvin. Those were three playmakers. If you are at number 9, even if you trade down to, say, number 13, 14, or 15 and pick up an extra draft pick, you need to pick in the top half of that first round. You need a playmaker. You need a difference maker. Listen, if you're in the second half of the draft of the first round, or second half of the first round, there is pressure on you, but it's also, you know, still a crapshoot. It took 4 years for Rashad Penny to show his value here. It took a couple of seasons for Jordan Brooks to show up as well. And remember, Jermaine Ifedi, he was the number 31 overall pick, and he walked around here with the stigma of being a first rounder for all those years. If you're going to pick in the top 15 of this draft, you need to get a playmaker that is going to be a difference maker on this team. And I say you have to make a pick.
Aaron Levine with us, Fox 13 in Seattle. It's draft coming up, 5 o'clock here. Russell Wilson's in Denver. How's the fan base in Seattle viewing that? Are they mad at Russell Wilson? Do they sort of accept that, you know, he had a good run and it was time? Or what's the outlook on Wilson right now?
I think a lot of fans are bitter toward Russell. It's a very different situation than Bobby Wagner because he was, you know, released in the way that all went down. With Russell, this sort of a simmering for the last year and a half. If you go all the way back to when he was sitting in the commissioner's box at the Super Bowl with Roger Goodell, and he was kind of, you know, bemoaning the fact of he went on with Dan Patrick the next week and talked about how he wasn't getting enough protection. This has been a slow build for the last year and a half of, is Russell really happy in Seattle? And so the fact that it's kind of viewed as if he forced the issue here and he forced this trade to Denver, and people aren't happy because for a number of years he talked about how loyal he was to the city, how he wanted to win another 3 more Super Bowls in Seattle. So for him to essentially force his way out of here and force this trade, it's not being viewed very kindly by most Seahawks fans out there.
I think they'll feel better if they are competitive, you know, and that division is awfully tough with the Rams, the Cardinals, the Niners, Seahawks in it. And, you know, how important is it with Pete Carroll's age and the Wilson thing just going down that they come back this year and have a little bounce back season?
I think it's incredibly important. I mean, you're coming off of a 7-10 season. They certainly underperformed, but if you take a look at how competitive they were in certain games, and a lot of these games did come down to the wire last year, you do bring a good core back. You have a solid couple of guys in the secondary and two safeties and Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams, hopefully comes back healthy, and hopefully Quandre Diggs does as well. I don't necessarily see them being a 13-14 this year. I don't think anybody really does, but if they can get to around, you know, 500, you can't do that with a 17 game schedule, but 9-8, 8-9 and contend for a playoff spot, then I think it will appease a number of fans. If they're starting to see a little bit of improvement, then hopefully you get that guy under center going forward that you really want. That's barring a major trade for, say, a Baker Mayfield this year. I don't necessarily know if he's the answer. And then we'll also see what Geno Smith and or Drew Lock can do as well.
Aaron Levine, Fox 12, Seattle is with us. Draft coming up 5 o'clock. Seahawks hoping, like a lot of teams, to positively affect their near-term future. You've been around Pete Carroll. Energy, energy, energy all the time. It blows me away. When you look at his age, he doesn't act his age. I think that's all great. How many years do you think Pete's got left?
I think at least 5 more. I mean, he always talks about how he's on the 5-year plan, and then he ends that, and then he goes on the next 5-year plan. I think you're looking at a longer-term situation with him. I mean, it's funny whenever the Seahawks and the Rams play, because you have Sean McVay, who's the youngest in the league, and Pete Carroll, who's the oldest, and yet he is just as spry and energy-like as Sean McVay. And they have an opportunity here. I mean, you take a look at this year's draft. If they were to stay in the position, draft position that they're in for the first few rounds, this would be the first time in 45 years since 1977 that the Seahawks would have 4 picks in the top 75 of a draft. It hasn't happened in more than 4 decades at this point. They have a chance to really build something and build their roster up through this draft, and it starts with that 9th overall pick. And I think that, you know, whoever that 9th overall pick is, you pick up his 5th-year option, Pete Carroll will still be the coach here by his 5th year in the league.
Aaron, you know, we often will see free agency in the draft as the way to build a team, but sometimes you get a player who maybe just, has a breakout season. Is there a guy on this roster that you're looking at that maybe the coaching staff is going, look, we don't need someone at this position because we feel like so-and-so is going to take a big step forward? Who comes to mind when I say that?
2 guys. First off, Daryl Taylor. He's shown sparks this last year. Remember, last year was essentially his rookie year. He lost his entire first season because of injury. He showed flashes last year. This is going to be a solid season for him. They need somebody to partner with him, though, out on the edge. I mean, is Alton Robinson the answer? Is Shelby Harris from Denver the answer? I don't know that. So maybe picking up a first rounder there. That's why I think edge is something you put under the microscope in the first round for sure. And I brought up Thibodeau in the past. Cornerback, I would say Trey Brown. You didn't see a lot of Trey Brown because he got injured, but he showed flashes in his rookie season at cornerback. I think that position, you need to build around Trey Brown. And I don't know if Sidney Jones is the answer, so maybe, again, you take a look at a cornerback at that position in number nine as well. So edge and cornerback, Daryl Taylor, Trey Brown, two guys I think are going to have a breakout season based on the small sample set that we've seen so far from those two.
Kayvon Thibodeau at Oregon, you got a chance to watch him from your vantage point. And, you know, look, he was great situationally. I get it. I get why some team's going to take him. But I am with those who say he disappeared in some big games. What is the viewpoint of Thibodeau from where you're sitting?
I don't know. I mean, it's always all about potential, right?
Yes.
And if the potential is sky high, then you kind of have to take it's kind of yin and yang with me because you need to hit on whoever you get at number nine. I mean, that is a must. But at the same time, the potential is there where if you do hit and all those concerns are he puts down all those concerns and he performs to the best of his ability and really is an impact player for the Seahawks this upcoming season, then you know it was the right pick. So I go back again when they were building this defense and they brought in Cliff Avril, they brought in Michael Bennett. You need a couple, you need a pair of edge guys that can really make an impact on the defensive line. And I think Thibodeau is one of those guys.
Aaron Levine, Fox 13 in Seattle. You went to Stanford. You worked at the student newspaper. You're in television. You've won Emmys. You're successful. But I got to know, what did your parents think when you said, you know what, I want to go in journalism. I want to be communications. And they said, you're at Stanford, Aaron. What was the reaction there?
I wish they would have actually said that to me when I was there. I was so tunnel visioned that I knew what I wanted to do. And in retrospect, I probably should have gone a different route. I love what I do. And this is a fantastic weekend every year at the NFL draft. But yeah, I had my first job in Bakersfield, California, where all of my fraternity brothers were on Wall Street making six figures right off the bat. And I was driving a punky old sports van that I thought was going to, break down everywhere I went in the middle of Tehachapi, California.
Who was the biggest sports star at Stanford when you were there as a student?
Ooh, Casey Jacobson, my freshman year. Mm. He was a junior that year. I got to travel with the Stanford men's basketball team. So you had the Collins twins that year, along with Josh Childress. He was first coming in. And then, it was a basketball team because they were number one or number two every year while I was there. So, and then, of course, my senior year was the fun Nick Robinson half-court shot against Arizona where everybody went crazy. And Tiger was there with his ex-wife, and Dick Vitale and Brent Musburger were there as well, too. So that was a really fun one, I think, in February of 2004.
You have good parents, because I think good parents, they support their kids, they support their dreams. It's only outsiders like us who go, you could have invented Google or something. Come on, Aaron. And I think it's great.
I joke with a lot of people because my senior year, the person that was spending a lot of time around our house happened to be Liz Holmes, of Theranos fame.
Yes.
And she did not have that really deep voice, the Steve Jobs voice that has been well documented since then. But it's funny because she was the little sis in the sorority of my best friend. And look where she is now.
Fantastic.
I'm glad I never associated too much with Liz Holmes.
All right. You've got a newscast to prepare for, a draft to prepare for. I appreciate you making time for us. Thank you, Aaron Levine, Fox 13.
Thanks for having me on.
There he is. Great stuff. I mean, really rich on the Seahawks, their plan. If Kayvon Thibodeau is there at nine, the Seahawks will be salivating. I don't know if he's going to be there. We had put the over-under at, 7.5 earlier. Kind of feel like, the Jets and the Giants having the picks where they are. Will it be difficult for them to pass on Thibodeau? Could he go as high as 3? Is it true? Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, and I were texting earlier today. He thinks some of the teams that are down the draft board are throwing shade at Thibodeau and smoke at Thibodeau to hope that maybe they can affect the teams in front of them, not picking them. I don't know. I don't know if there's that to it, because I kind of feel that way as well when I look at what happened with him at Oregon in the last year. But part of it, too, for me with Kayvon Thibodeau is, you know, there's a little bit – I'm a little bit like an old man on my lawn. I'm watching an era where name, image, likeness, and the transfer portal, and you are too, has changed college athletics. And we're watching players who have recognized and captured their own brand and seized control of it. We're watching these players kind of do things differently. They are reflective of the modern college athlete. Kayvon Thibodeau is in the wheelhouse of that. So there's some of that maybe that is affecting the way I view him. We will know for sure, though, coming up at 5 o'clock, as we have it, and we'll have it here live. I want you to leave it here. You got the BFT statewide.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, Kayvon Thibodeau's got his mom and dad and 198 other people with him in Las Vegas for the NFL draft coming up at 5 o'clock. We will have it right here. Wherever you're listening across the BFT radio network, you will hear the draft coverage live as it unfolds. Kayvon Thibodeau said that, you know, he's within a drive of L.A. He's got 200 people there with him, but he brought mom and dad on the red carpet. Is that the right move?
Absolutely.
Anna? Anna's back in the studio, by the way. Is that the right move?
Yes. But can you imagine? That's quite a contingent.
200 people.
Adam, who did you bring?
200 of his closest friends and family.
I don't know that that would be productive to have that many people along for the ride.
Like, how far away was I from an invite? Was I like 500, 600?
Cause,
Did he ask for 400 and get 200?
Is it like a wedding? Or is he paying for all these people? I have so many questions.
I'll tell you what. Vegas, we talked about you enjoying the 2020 draft, and it was kind of cool to see them all in their living rooms and different people they invited. But Vegas, if I was like a first-round pick, would probably be the site I choose. It's the ultimate party afterwards once you get picked.
I think it would be overwhelming. And then what happens if you're a fringe pick? You're somebody who may... Let's look at the Pac-12, for example. Like, in the Pac-12 world, you know, three players were drafted last year in the first round. The Pac-12 right now has, you know, about five players that could go in the first round. Thibodeau is obviously going to go. Drake London, USC wide receiver, will be picked in the first round. He may be the first receiver taken. Devin Lloyd, the linebacker from Utah, will be a first-round pick. Trent McDuffie, the corner from Washington, and Kyler Gordon, the other corner from Washington, both right there as possible first round draft picks. Let's just say you're McDuffie or you're Gordon and you slip out of the first round. Do you still want to be in Vegas watching everyone else party, or would you have rather sat home?
I think it's just, you know, it's part of the excitement. It's a celebration either way, right?
Come back tomorrow. Come back tomorrow. You didn't get picked today?
Yeah, especially because the first round is like 4 hours, too. Like,
I don't think so.
If I'm not going to be a first-round pick, just tell me. I'll save a lot of time.
Yeah, I don't. I wouldn't want to be one of those guys who's projected to go like 22 and beyond and be in Vegas and watching it all go down, and you're sitting there and the camera's on you. It's uncomfortable. You're falling. Like, it could, you know, like, presumably it could happen to Thibodeau. What happens if he's still on the board at 7, 8? You know, the camera's going to find him as the teams are starting to pick. We have seen this happen.
I know. I don't want that to happen for him.
I don't either.
Best.
I don't want it to happen to anybody.
Well, the thing is, I mean, these are players who are competing at a very high level of competition. They're not unaccustomed to pressure. It's a different kind of pressure, granted, like they're not on a field, but, you know, I that counts for something, right?
It does. It does. But you have the problem that these players have in the position they're in right now is there is competition for their services. You know, all the agents want to represent them.
Sure.
So what do the agents do? No agent's going to tell somebody who's a bubble first round pick, hey, I'm not sure if you're going to get picked.
That's not what they want to hear, and it's not going to make them want to sign. So they have been told, you're a pick. You're going to go in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I've got you. I'm representing you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw a party for you. So you can invite 200 of your friends. I'm going to throw a party in Vegas for you. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I've got your business manager picked out. I've got your social media manager picked out. We already have endorsements lined up with Fruit of the Loom and Gatorade. And you're going to go in the first round. And then it doesn't happen.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
So there's, you know, I can guarantee you that there are probably about 40 players who have been told by their agents, you are a first round pick. There's not 40 spots.
Yeah. My hands are vicariously getting sweaty now.
There you go.
You've adequately painted the picture for me.
And for people who don't think it matters what happens today for the Pac-12 conference, the Pac-12 has had three players picked in the first round of the last three drafts. Okay. It ranks them below the SEC, below the Big Ten. It puts them in, you know, Big 12 ACC territory with first-round picks. It's really important for the conference to be able to say, hey, we didn't make the playoff, but, hey, we had five first-round draft picks this year, and that is an improvement over the last three seasons. And it can be held up to potential recruits who are waiting to make their decision because you know what's going to happen. The SEC and the Big Ten are going to go, look, don't go to the Pac-12. You can't get to the NFL. You can't get in the first round if you go to the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come with us, we're going to have 10 players drafted. The over-under for SEC players picked in the first round, I believe, is 12. So you're looking at, you know, we're approaching half of the first round to go to the SEC. So I think it is an important night, and I think it would be really important tonight to hear Kayvon Thibodeau go, Drake London go, Devin Lloyd go, and then the two corners from Washington, McDuffie and Gordon, and maybe, you know, there's some other players who are on the bubble. Could they get a fifth? Could they get a sixth player into the first round? If they could, George Kliavkov will be tweeting it. You better believe it. King George will be out there tweeting.
Where is he tonight? Is he in Vegas? Is he on
that's where he lives.
Home turf?
Yeah, that's where he lives.
You know?
He got all weird when I asked him, where's your house?
Well, yeah. Again, back to the privacy issue.
Yeah, he told me. He said I'm not wild about telling you this. He goes, but I can be home from the strip in about 10 minutes.
Okay.
So he's like, I'm not wild about telling you this. I said, I don't need your address. Like, I'm not going to show up at your house. But I said, how far away are you? Like, you know, if you need to get, you know, we were at the T-Mobile Arena. Right on the strip, and I said, if you had to go home right now, how fast could you get home? He said, 10 minutes. I said, okay, that's all I wanted to know. I'm not trying to be a weirdo about it.
You were going to fly a drone over his house?
Yeah, I said, oh, yes, I know. It's trash day is Wednesday at your house.
Oh, God.
It's creepy.
Yeah.
All right, leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the bald-faced truth.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.